Thank you very much, Dale, for asking me to come, Billy and Sam, and the Blue Ridge Speakers Group. My name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. What happened? Oh boy, it's really, really something. I just want to say that we're either casualties or survivors. I consider them both the same as a recovering alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 19th, 1989, 34 and a third years. 34 minutes is a lot for a guy like me, let alone 34 and a third years. I don't have a home group. I have two sponsors in New York, one in particular. His name is Bad Mike, and he took me under his shoulder, and they drilled it into me a long time ago. What happened was I was born into a somewhat of a middle class family in Brooklyn, New York. My father was an alcoholic, but I don't like to say that because he was a wonderful provider. He was an incredible provider. My mother was a homemaker who later went back to work. She was a dynamite piano player. Older brother, younger sister. And I, like everybody else probably in this room, I felt alone most of my life. I might as well get into it and say that what happened really at 6 and a half years old, and I don't mean to sound make it sound like an excuse. I unlatched a window on the second floor of my parents' house, and I fell head first and landed on cement. It was a terrible accident. And in those days, there was no such thing as an MRI machine. So I said to myself, well, I don't want to tell anybody I'm ashamed, and I'll fake it through life. That's exactly what happened. My parents didn't tell me, don't tell anybody. Terrible accident happened. I tried my best to fit in, to just about do anything. I delivered newspapers. I built a bicycle at 12 years old. I shined shoes under the train station. But God was there all the time, but you could never have told me that at the time. Even before I started drinking, there were certain situations that were happening, and I didn't know how they were happening. But I was an alcoholic before I picked alcohol up. And I'm pretty sure one of the main things it was because of that fall. I tried to attend public school. I made it through public school. Then on my way to high school, I was bullied by a lot of guys in Brooklyn. I was like a nerdy kid, you know, and I couldn't tell anybody about what happened. And I became frightened. I never fought back. I'm not a fighter. So I was recommended to leave high school in my junior year. And New York State law at those days, they said, well, we can't have a 16-year-old walking around the street. So they sent me to a reform school, which was really convenient because it was on the Bowery of New York, where guys had knives and zip guns. And I guess I was being groomed to go to the big house. That was what was happening. I didn't know. I couldn't figure it out. It was really traumatic. Okay. Then at 17 years old, I answered an ad in the paper. This is even before the drinking started. 17 years old, I answered an ad in the paper that said, "Hardworking young man wanted." And I believe that God knows our dreams. And sometimes they happen, sometimes they don't, but they don't happen when we want them to happen, I found out. I answered the ad. It was a toss-up between me and a college graduate. They wanted me. They gave me the job. But my self-esteem was so low in my life that after 2 years, I ran away from the first miracle that approached me. So, of course, then I started drinking and drinking and drinking. During that period, I really, in the neighborhood, I started working for a decorator in Brooklyn. And he taught me all about draperies. and I became very good at draperies, with draperies. I went from Burdine's department store in Miami to Beverly Hills, California, with draperies. And I did the best I could. I thought that was going to be it. It didn't happen. I became so good at what I did. After I become good at what I do, I leave and I go on to something else. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if anything could make me happy. I really started drinking. I got into music. What happened was it was the guitar first, and then my fingers had blisters, so I complained and I became a drummer. And when the doctors, saw the accident, what happened to me, they said, your son's going to have a lot of problems in life. There was no MRI machine, no nothing. And sure enough, I did have problems. I couldn't retain information in the education system, so I went out on my own. I went out on my own. When I hit bars and lounges, as a musician, people said, you're really good, let me buy you a drink. I never said no. I kept doing it. I was a binge drinker. I thought my job in life was to, I'm from the Catskill Mountains in New York State. I spent most of my life. I thought that most of my job in life was to outdrink the German lumberjacks in the Catskill Mountains. And I did a good job of it until I became ill. I started having medical problems. There are followers and leaders in life. I've always been a follower. I've never been a leader. The big book, it talks about, well, the 12 and 12 about big shots. And, I never really wanted that. I just wanted to be left alone and try to live life and fit in. And in bars and lounges, I really did feel comfortable. But nobody told me about consequences. I worked my way up as a stagehand. The way I became a stagehand 16 years later, after I sabotaged the miracle that I just talked about when I was 17, I hitchhiked to California with two big rigs. And they said, where do you want to get off at? And I said, just drop me at any of the studios. I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. I wasn't going to give up. So Universal Studios, the big rig driver dropped me out of. I jumped over the wall at Universal Studios, and the fattest guy on the lot, I thought for sure he was a stagehand. I said, hey, buddy, let me borrow your hammer. He lent me his hammer. I went to the loading dock. I said, same time tomorrow. And they said, who are you? And I said, what do you mean? I'm Bob so-and-so. So he wrote my name down. I hitchhiked to the Union Hall, the first organized union in the United States stagehand. They wrote my name down. I did 26 years as a professional stagehand by jumping over the wall. I found out that alcoholics, we usually get what we want, but we don't hold on to it too long, We ruin things and we sabotage things, wives, girlfriends, whatever. During this period, the late part of me being a stage technician, I worked from Hollywood to DC to New York. Money was rolling in. I was working very, very hard. God made me work indoor construction really hard. They used to twist the scenery on me to get rid of me, and I would say, what time tomorrow? Not like that. I mean, what time tomorrow? And I kept going at it. During that period, I had met a lady outside of Woodstock, New York, Linda, who was a wonderful, honest person. And, the bottom line. Why does every alcoholic have to hit rock bottom? Everything was taken from me about 1987, or actually before that. Everything was taken, all the doors closed up. I couldn't get work. I was starving. I was freezing. I became homeless for over 20 years up in New York State. This is like Disneyland to me, Virginia, compared to the weather in upstate New York. And I wandered into the rooms of AA on West 63rd, off of Broadway and Central Park West. And the last gig, the last job that I had was around the corner at ABC Television. I had no idea they had an IOP. I had no idea that I could have asked for help while I was an employee. I guess I wanted to do it my way, or I took the licking. I took the licking. I didn't think anything of it. I remember walking down Lexington Avenue many, many times and watching people eat beautiful, beautiful dinners, you know, married couples. And I would almost started crying, saying, how could this happen? How could this happen? How could I knew I was a super hard worker, never told anybody about what happened when I was a young kid. I faked it, like I said, through life, and God allowed me to make it to pretty close to the top as a stage technician. But God took everything, completely everything away from me. I think it was a test to see if a guy like me could straighten up and get sober. It was a tremendous gift. I didn't think that way at the time. I might as well say that I grew up with a brother that's a year and a half older than myself, and he's a tape expert. He was involved in very heavy, heavy things with courtrooms, and you know, the stagehand union was run by some shady characters, to say the least. It was part of life. And I was really in the groove with that, you know. And I don't know. I just kept drinking, drinking, and drinking. And one day it happened. I wound up in AA. And John H. from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, in those days, 34 and a half years ago, 34 and 30 years ago, I didn't have to raise my hand and say, I need a sponsor. John H. said, you're mine. And he said, do you want to work? I said, sure. And he had a trucking business where he trucked antiques for Sotheby's and the other one in New York City. He was in the program a year and a half before me. This guy bought me a meatloaf lunch, meatloaf like a dinner with mashed potatoes and gravy. And that's all it took for me to keep coming back. He bought me a hot meal and they drilled it into me. They recommended that I go to one step meeting a week, one speaker meeting a week, a 12 and 12 meeting a week. They wanted me to get an overall consensus of what AA was all about. Gave me a big book. I could almost memorize a recite. It's just unbelievable. By the way, this is the only education I've ever had, which, because you know what happened. I was unable to. I wanted to be, you know, and another strange thing happened too. When I was homeless, I went to Brooklyn College and I said, could you please let me sit in on a couple of courses? I was homeless at the time. I wanted to stay warm. And they said, no, we're sorry, you're a high school dropout. We can't have that. And I went to the registrar, I filled out an application, and they said, he's designated me as a 044. And I said, well, doesn't that mean that I'm degree bearing? Doesn't that mean that you have to accept me? And the registrar said, yes, you have to be right. We have to accept you. So I took deviant behavior because I wanted to know why I was thinking so crazy. And I took a criminology course to think that, you know, what was going on over here. And of course, I failed the courses. But I volunteered for the college work study. It's not for me. I'm still a character. I can't help it. So I volunteered for the college work study, and I ended up working with a guy that was a professor of journalism during the day, bread and butter, but he was an astrophysicist in real life. The guy became famous, and he took me under his wings. And I didn't go ahead and say, yeah, my high school job, yeah, what do you think? This But I just became a gopher. I liked being a gopher. And I did whatever he told me. And he insisted on his first book. He's got 32 books out right now. I won't even mention his name. Well, he was Carl Sagan's right-hand assistant anyway. He insisted on putting my name on the front page of the book when it was published, his, because I volunteered. I didn't pass anything, of course, at Brooklyn College, but who cares? So I brought the book home to my mother, and I come from a good family. And I showed the book to my mother, and I said, "Look, Mom, 2.5 years, look what I've done." And she said, "Oh, somebody has the same name as you?" That's where I come from. Because my brother, because he was doing all this secret CIA, Department of Justice, really important work. The spotlight went on my older brother, and I was a loser completely in real life. But the coincidences continued to happen. That job that I had when I was 17, it was a golden opportunity. But I didn't think that much of myself to continue it. And I just kept drinking, drinking, drinking. I thought for sure, this alcoholic thought for sure, that the party would be over at probably about 30 years old. I said I would throw a certain line out, and now we want to see the look on his face. If I was told, if you remember the 60s, you probably weren't there. That's exactly what happened with me. I wound up in Woodstock, New York, not for the, I was too paranoid to go with that. I was a really good musician. It's not just me saying it. I really studied. I thought that was going to be it. But what happened was I was like a degenerate. I was really turning into something that didn't deserve to be here. It's very something, really something. I went to see a movie, the other night, and it was a movie, and I saw in the movie people that I drank with, and they all died. They all died. And here I am. And somebody once said to me that I never forgot, and I think this has to do with a lot of alcoholics. You probably will be very good or not necessarily great and live a short life, or you could be less good and live a long life. That's what they mean, I believe, by being another regular person, a bozo on the bus. By joining Alcoholics Anonymous and living by the heart. Not, this never meant much to me because I didn't have very much up here. So I thought, Alcoholics Anonymous, when I came in here, the first thing they said to me was, "What anybody thinks of you is none of your business." I said, "Is this possible?" Because I've always cared what people thought. I thought that what we see is the truth, but that's not the way that I live. I live, it's the inside, complete inside of a person that counts. It's not what somebody looks like. I was being groomed when I was out in California. God wanted to do unbelievable things for me, and I ran away. I ran away because that's what I do. I run away. I'm not one of these gimme, 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 I want, I want, I want. Somebody said something in the beginning in AA to me, not necessarily to me, but they said it. They said, the more a person uses the letter I depends upon how many meetings they need. And that really hit me. That really hit me because in the beginning, I wanted to be somebody, and I saw that I felt comfortable drinking. I felt comfortable. I was a binge drinker, with lots of incredible music, incredible people. I don't know. I can't explain. This alcoholic can't really explain it. As a matter of fact, the coincidences were a bit too much. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to know my mother. I can't remember whether I was invited to my father's funeral or not. I don't think so. We were at odds, but he offered me. I was supposed to be the one that was supposed to do the family business. It was corrugated boxes. My brother was a college guy. He was brilliant with the tape stuff. My sister wasn't for it, and my father offered it to me. And I said, "No, thanks, Dad. I got to go to a party." And that's what happened. I'm a person that turns things down, you know? It's just what happened. I'm not greedy, I don't think. And I don't know, maybe it's an ego thing or something. I really don't know. So I lost Linda, the only lady I ever really loved. The doors closed up, the union, everything. This alcoholic could have fought it with an attorney, but I said to myself, this is so horrendous. I knew I was a really good worker. It was all taken from me. Homeless, boy, I know what that's like. And I decided just go along with it. Go along with it. You know, when this alcoholic saw the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I was told every alcoholic wants to be different. And I read that step like we, the multiple personalities. I was an alcoholic that whatever you wanted me to be, I was. I'm a people pleaser. I'm never this control freak, never been that type. That scares me. Even people with high degrees, PhDs, and very bright people, it's frustrating for me. I relate more to squirrels and birds and streams. That's how I got off of many medications that I was given. You know, they sent me to a psychiatrist at a very young age. I was afraid to tell him what I was thinking because I thought that if I told this person what I was thinking, they would lock me up and throw the key away for the rest of my life. So I took whatever they gave me. And how I stopped that about 30 years after that was I bathed in freezing cold streams at 6 a.m. in the morning for a long time up in the mountains. That's why I come to Madison. I see life here. I got to know my mother. For 22 years, I showed up for her before she went on her journey. I just want to say my brother calls me once a month to see how I am. My sister tells me she loves me. Losing becomes winning. I don't know how else to put it. So the first step I read like that. The second step of AA takes it for granted that we return to sanity. 6.5 years old, I never had sanity to begin with, but I could never say that to anybody. Even my sponsor, John. I just want to share for a second about John. He bought me the meatloaf dinner, you know, and it took me under his wings and really, really, I saved my life. He's still helping hundreds and hundreds of people on the west side of Manhattan. I was afraid of him when I met him. He looks like a very rough guy. After getting to knowing this guy, it was unbelievable, unbelievable. And when I did a fifth step with John H. from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, I was in the truck with him delivering antiques in those days, 1988, it was 89. When I shared my fifth step and I told him stuff that was going on within myself, I just want to share this, might help somebody. He said to me, "Robert, when I was drinking, I ran up and down Broadway naked with a baseball bat. And I said to myself, I got to get out of this truck." And that's, he said that in order so I would feel good about myself and not be so down on myself. Because I feel like I lived a life and I watched everybody get ahead except me, you know? But I'm grateful just to have a roof over my head. to say hello to somebody, to smile at somebody. I was promiscuous when I was in the height of the 60s and 70s. A day doesn't go by when I don't ask for forgiveness. The third step about God. First of all, I was turned away from my own religion. I was kind of rejected. Nobody seemed to really like me. But they still held an affair for me when I was 13. It's the same thing when a Christian person, you know, at 13, they're supposed to be a man. They did it for me, but I was never really all there in life. It's pretty much was a dream world. But here's the problem. I became an alcoholic. I was an alcoholic before I drank. When a dream comes true, it's not good all the time for people. You have to be ready for it. I know that. You have to be ready for it. And I've never really seemed to have enough confidence to say, you know, let's go. Give me a shot. Anyway, the third step, I was convinced that something's going on, I like to say. Fourth step. Okay, this is a good one I just came up with the other day. In New York City, in a court of law, whether you get a traffic ticket or you have an offense, a criminal offense, you're allowed to say guilty with an explanation. To me, the fourth step is guilty. And the sixth and seventh step are the explanations of what happened. Even though the fourth step, when we write it all and do our inventory, we come up with an agenda of why, pretty much why we did those things. I had no problem doing the fifth step. These steps, I try to live these steps. They continue to work me. They continue to work me. There's no, I don't care what anybody else does. A kid sat next to me today and he said, let me have your phone number. You know, I recognized him. I gave him a lift to Little Washington to a meeting a couple of weeks ago. And I didn't want to. I gave him my phone number. And I said, call me when you freak out. Just like that. If you think you're going to freak out, call me. I'm just going to put this out. And you know what he said to me? Call me when you freak out. So I got a beautiful bond with this kid, you know, a beautiful, beautiful understanding. And that's the way that I've been doing this thing for 34 and a third years. Like I said, I could retain information now, but the magic word I was told by my recent sponsor, Bad Mike, is, you know, things change and they become, the magic word is different. They become different. I've learned how to live a life without conflict. I often said, and I'm not a Zen guy, when your heart is friendly with your mind without conflict, then you got it. You got a semblance of peace, quiet, and you could see real life. In other words, the truth. This process of Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to feel and see the truth of what's really happening, not my subliminal, subconscious. Here's another thing you might relate to. I mistook creativity for insanity, that a lot of alcoholics really got to think after they hear that one. In other words, I thought that the more that I drank, wow, this is a beauty. You know, we got to do this. We got to do that. And I've never been a big shot. I've always been, like I said, I'm an Indian, not a chief. God wanted me to be a chief, but I'm an Indian. And that's what happened. That's what happened. I'm happy with little. I have a car outside with a license to go with it. That always gets a chuckle from people in AA. I got arrested maybe about four times about 40 years ago. And I'm guilty. I'm a guilty guy. I came up with a line. You know, I've been sorry my whole life. What's another hour? It's true. I've been sorry my whole life. I just can't. Everybody was better than, you know, I don't know. I've never been married. 76 years old. Never been. Who's going to marry a guy like me? But, I mean, you know, what do I have to offer? What is this? All right, so what I found out was that a lot of people in AA have been abused, and they want to be around nice people. They want to be around nice people. And that's what this whole journey is continually showing me. And this alcoholic also came to a conclusion that we had to do more good things than lousy things in life, or else we never would have the red carpet roll out within Alcoholics Anonymous and come in here. I can't help what happened in the past, but I have to believe that God was there all the time. It was the 60s. You know, I thought it was going to be one big party and that was going to be it. Not true. There's more work to be done. So somebody has a lot of trust in people like us. I don't care what anybody did for a living. I mean, did in their past. I came to the 79th Street Workshop in New York City, my second week in AA. Two guys that were just released from Rikers Island, muscle-bound. Muscle-bound guys, just released Rikers Island, prison, jail, whatever the hell it is. And I said, what's going on? Is this the AA meeting down in the basement? They said, yeah. There are murderers, rapists, liars, and thieves. Welcome. And I said to myself, I don't know about this. I'm not exempting myself from any of the, you know. So I went down there second week and I continued. And I came on the journey of AA. No problem with the fifth step. I wanted to get off my, like I said, if I thought I told the psychiatrist what I was thinking, I was really, really afraid. A big trust issue in my life, which a lot of people have. 6 and 7, got to go to God. Got to go to God. It was explained to me, especially on 6 character defects. Look, and if you think they're removed forever, you better double up on your meetings, pal. You know, they're put in a shelf in the kitchen and a combination lock is put on the doors. And God has the combination lock. Of course, the key word is willingness. You know, and boy, oh boy, I was really, 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 I was worn out. I was tired. 1 minute, I'm making like $200 a day 38 years ago. And the next minute, I'm homeless. What's going on? The 8th step, made a list. As soon as I heard that, I started singing to myself. Santa Claus is coming to town, naughty or nice. That's what I kept saying to myself. Boy, the stress sounds like that. And that's exactly what happened. I continue to make a list only because an old timer in AA said to me, the longer you're sober, the better your memory gets. That hit me. That was below the belt. Couldn't say anything. I love when I hear wisdom where you can't even think of a thought to talk back and question it. It's like a one-way street. You know, that's what I really understand. And it comes in loud and clear and stays with me. 9th step, except when to injure them or others. I have a problem. I created something lately where I think I might actually be a father from, I believe it could be Linda, the lady that I loved. And my sponsor in New York continues to tell me he's proud of me. And I don't ask why, but I believe he's proud of me because I'm not doing anything stupid, which I usually would, but not in AA. So I've been advised to take certain avenues and certain things. And nothing is a rush for me in AA. This is not a marathon. Dr. Bob wanted everybody to do the steps in one day, as far as I understand. That's not, I don't do that. I don't do that. Like I say, I exactly what was done for me. Go to a step meeting, get an all-around consensus about what's going on here. And also we'll try our best to love you until you can love yourself. Because if I was about to tell you that I know the exact what love is all about, forget about it. I don't qualify to even attempt to tell you. However, the one thing that I heard in my life that I took in and never forgot was a guy said, love is when you think about somebody more than yourself. That registered with me and that hit me, and that's cool. That's cool. Ninth step, you have to enter with caution, of course. We all know that. Tenth step, well, I do a 10th step every day because I want a clear conscience. You know, today it happened. I quoted, we were talking about third step prayer at a meeting in Charlottesville. And I said, well, when I don't ask for anything, it all comes. But then again, there's a guy, a religious guy, that comes up to me and says, well, the New Testament states that ask and you shall receive. And my original sponsor said to me, Robert, don't try to make a deal with God. And the guy leading the meeting, I talked to him after the meeting, and he started picking apart everything with the statement that I made about the Bible. You know, ask and you shall receive. I said, you know, I don't do that. And I'll tell you the truth. What I felt like saying to this guy, and I didn't, you taught me not to. And I just let him ramble on, man. And that's what we sometimes have to do. You know, because I know where I came from. I was the complete opposite, afraid to trust anybody or tell anybody what I was thinking. And Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard that anything is acceptable, except if you pick up a chair and started throwing it at people. That's what they told me in New York, because a lot of people are not happy when they come into AA. But it turns out to be the most incredible, it's like hitting the lottery without buying a ticket. But what we did was because of the stuff that happened, and now a lot, I think we're handpicked, by the way. I can't prove it, but I have a good vibe on that one. You hear stories in here that you think they're unbelievable, but by the time you come into AA, this is for the boy that cried wolf or the girl that cried wolf. Finally, people will listen to us and, you know, love and tolerance. Love and tolerance. A guy sent me a coin. I don't like the term sponsorship, whatever. Sent me, ordered a beautiful coin and had it sent to me 30, 34 and a third years. I never had that in my life. I sent the one back for the 10 years that he just accomplished. Anyway, I've been involved with a lot of different types of people in my life, you know, and I never thought anybody would understand what was going on with inside of me. Maybe that's my little bit of esteem. I was afraid to tell anybody. I was afraid to tell anybody, share what my brother's work, what he was doing. I was involved with some really, really characters. I'm not going to go into this stuff with the war stories. It's not worth it. It's more worth it talking about looking and realizing beautiful things in life. We were all given a reprieve with the hopes that we could send out a good vibe to someone who thinks it's over, it's just beginning. And this is my own, what this alcoholic thought of. And I like subconscious, profound, crazy stuff, in other words. You know, I dig Joseph Campbell, whatever those. Super, super beautiful people. A new pair of glasses. Our good, beloved Sandy B. Clancy. The true understanding is not to understand. That becomes the understanding. And for me, that invites miracles to come in. I was told there's no such thing as a big deal any longer in life. The big deals become small deals. There's no such thing as a big deal. I was taught about being accountable. Guy in Richmond has a lot of sponsees, young men. He tells them, call me at 2 o'clock. If they call at 2:01, he doesn't answer the phone. He also says, if you lie to me once, I'm not your sponsor. You know, I'm not saying I agree, but it's just an example of what some people need in life. You know, I came in here, I had nowhere to go. I had nowhere to go. Everything was taken. Everything was taken. No more money. You know, I'm not against people with money, but sometimes money is not that good for an alcoholic. You know, because they get what they want. It's not good. I was telling a guy before the meeting, I'm glad I never had enough money to buy a motorcycle. And I rode Triumph Bonnevilles, Norton Commandos, Holly Sportsters. When I was a kid, I'm so glad that God didn't let me have a motorcycle when I was younger, or a fast car. I was the guy who drove cars with mufflers hanging down, bald tires. I remember hitting these two deer outside of Woodstock, New York one night, going for a nightcap. They called it a nightcap. I wanted to have a drink, just one last drink, from bar to bar to bar to bar. I had these two deer, continued, and I made it to the place. Got the nightcap. There are many times in Ulster County, upstate New York, I was sleeping on the side of the road, and a sheriff in a red and white sheriff's car would say, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? And drive me back to the rooming house. He had a six-pack of beer on his front seat, the sheriff's deputy. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That's the life what happens to people like us. So I was also told Alcoholics Anonymous is a disease of loneliness. Yeah, it is. But it's under control, in other words. I'm not the person I used to be. Because I hear stories in AA that are unbelievable. Unbelievable. I thought everybody was acting when I first came in here. I thought they were making up these stories. But there was this one story that I heard, and I said to myself, there's no possible way. I was recommended to go to a meeting called the studio meeting. I'm not an East Side guy. I was on the West Side working at Lincoln Center, indoor construction. I went to the studio meeting. East 74th Street in New York City. And a lady came into the meeting, and she was like the diplomat's wife from Belgium. I just want to put this out because it's shocking. And she told this story, and she looked like so attractive. And I was homeless at the time. And she started telling a story that when she was 8 years old, she went up to her mother's bedroom, and the mother took her own life in front of the 8-year-old child. And that was her story of why she became an alcoholic. And I said to myself, there's no possible way that this lady made up this story. And I kept coming back because I just wanted to relate to people. Finally, they said it takes a long time to come out of the closet. It takes a long time to come out of the woods. I lived in the woods for a long time, you know, and I thought it was good. I thought it was okay, you know, and I mean, you can't look at it. I was going to bring up a little picture, but it had my social security number on it, and I don't trust everybody. you know, that's how crazy this is. But I looked like Charles Manson at the time. I mean, I looked really, really completely different than 34 and a third years ago. So what I have to say is that the 11th step to me means being closer to God. I don't have to know what God's will is. No, I asked a bishop in Richmond one time. I asked him about God's will, and he said, well, it's not God's will. It was people that did these things. I was curious about something. Well, my original sponsor, this is a good answer. I said, John, how come I'm not allowed to know what God's will is? A guy from the west side of Manhattan. You know what he said? Robert, if you knew what God's will was, you'd probably mess it up anyway. So it's better you don't know. I went along with that. That registered with me. Can't argue with it. It's one way. It comes in. 12 step. Yeah. Anywhere I've been in the last 34 and a third years, I continue to try my best to do service, to try to help people with the little that I have. And I know it's like a mystery, but I mean, that's what they said. They say sobriety is it's a mystery. It's a mystery because we are being introduced to our true selves, not who we thought we were, or who we thought we could be, or who we wanted to be. We could finally look in the mirror and not say, you're ugly, man. You're thinking ugly. What I found out that was, like I said before, it's not what we see true. It's much deeper than that. And they mentioned the fourth dimension in this literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. For me, I think the fourth dimension is transportation to a spiritual life. I never heard anybody put a nail the fourth dimension completely, whatever. I don't know what it is. But all I know is these things have been happening in my life. I got to know my mother, very mysterious, very secretive lady. Secretive. I come from a family. I don't even know my sister's address. She never gave it to me, and I don't even say why. I think it's either because of the work that my brother's done, or it's because of all the sins that I've done in my early life. I don't even, you know, it's okay. And so I got the gift. I got part of my family back. And now I'm in the process of finding out if I may be a father without injuring them or others, doing it in a decent way. And Bad Mike, by the way, my man in New York, just for the heck of it, I might as well tell you, he's over 80 years old. He's got 45 years sobriety. He was in 101st Airborne. He used to tell me he jumped out of perfectly good airplanes. That wasn't enough. He became a New York City cop. That wasn't enough. Then he became a New York City fireman. And I used to say, hey, Mike, you're like a triple dipper, huh? And he used to say, don't let any women hear that. You know, just like that. But he's got a second family. He's such a wise man that I have met people in these rooms that have, to me, it's like a symphony. I'm not a symphony guy. I'll quote a couple of things from some rock and roll things that will relate to alcoholism. One of the greatest rock and roll groups, part of the lyrics are, I won't be fooled again. And basically what that means to me, like 40, 50 years later, is I won't be fooled by my own. Like I said, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. The many, many different lives, the many personalities. Big book talks about Jekyll and Hyde. It makes sense to me. There's a tune, 96 Tears. The name of the group is Question Mark and the Mysterians. That's what AA means to me. And but I found out that the sad tears, this alcoholic has a feeling about you're really not sober until you cry. The sad tears come out sad and they turn happy after a while. I don't know how that happens, but it happens for me. And there are so many other lyrics and tunes that they were trying to tell us. When you find yourself in times of trouble, Mother Mary said to me, "Seek the words of wisdom." That's what AA is. I'm here to seek the words of wisdom so maybe I'll live that way in life. Because it was really, really insane, whacked out. And this alcoholic doesn't know exactly. I don't ask why. Somebody said why is not a spiritual question. I don't know why I got the break. I don't know why everybody, I don't ask about everybody else, why this, why that. Like I said, like this alcoholic said before, this alcoholic believes that we are handpicked. We are handpicked to have a really good, whatever's left. I'm 76 years old, enough is enough. I mean, it's unbelievable, unbelievable. Unbelievable that you even asked me to even say anything at all. I'm just a dropout trying to drop in. God bless AA. Thank you.